You're listening to Comedy Central.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Daily Social Distancing Show. I'm Trevor Noah. Today is Monday, the 16th of November, which means President Trump has only 65 days left to sell all the White House furniture on Craigslist. Come on, Trump, get going! Anyway, coming up on tonight's show, there's a younger and hotter coronavirus vaccine. Donald Trump gets a loser parade in his honor, and Ta-Nehisi Coates is joining us on the show to talk about how his books are being turned into movies. So let's do this, people. Welcome to the Daily Social Distancing Show.
From Trevor's couch in New York City to your couch somewhere in the world, this is the Daily Social Distancing Show with Trevor Noah. Ears edition.
Let's kick things off with the coronavirus. It's the reason we're all throwing dinner parties in a parking lot. Right now, things are looking pretty dire. There have been over 11 million recorded cases in the US, and one third of all Americans know someone who has died of COVID-19. And with the holidays just around the corner, there is both good news and bad news. The bad news, of course, is that you won't be able to spend time with your extended family. The good news is you won't have to spend time with your extended family. And this morning, there was also some really good news.
This morning, another potential breakthrough in the battle against COVID. A vaccine developed by Moderna showing a 94.5% efficacy rate in a trial with 30,000 participants.
One big difference between the Moderna vaccine and one developed by Pfizer that also reported very promising results in early trials, Moderna says its vaccine doesn't need to be kept at extremely low temperatures to remain stable. That could help with shipping and distribution.
Yes, people, just weeks after a vaccine was announced, there's another one on the way. I mean, are you serious? No vaccine, two vaccines. I mean, at this point, in 3 months, we're gonna have so many vaccines, you'll be able to pick the one that just best fits your personality. Are you getting the Moderna vaccine? No, dude, I'm getting the Pfizer one. I mean, I'm a Gemini. Now, apparently the Pfizer vaccine is 90% effective, but the Moderna vaccine is 94.5% effective. You know what that means, right? I'm taking both. Because then I'll be 184% immune from COVID, baby. Woo! When COVID is in the room, it's gonna catch me. Where you at, COVID? Where you at? This is also gonna raise the stakes for vaccines, because some scientists will come out like, I made another vaccine. It is 88% effective. And we'll be like, what? Kill yourself, you 88% dumbass. And here's something interesting. Moderna says that its research is going much faster than expected because in order to get enough data, they need a certain number of people in the study to catch coronavirus. And that has been extremely easy because this pandemic is so out of control. Just imagine that for a second. We're getting the vaccine faster because of irresponsible people. So you need to go out on your balcony at 7 p.m. tomorrow night. And you clap for those people who are not wearing masks. But guys, let me tell you something. When this vaccine hits, the streets are gonna be lit. It's gonna be like the end of World War II. Hell, I'm gonna be in Times Square kissing the first bat that I see. Come here. But let's move on. Because even as the coronavirus is keeping most people close to home, there are still some people out there who are living their lives and even traveling. And I mean, really traveling.
Just hours ago, SpaceX launched four astronauts to the International Space Station. It's significant because it's the first full-fledged taxi flight for NASA by a private company. The crew will reach the space station late tomorrow and stay there until spring.
That's right, folks. Thanks to Elon Musk and SpaceX, astronauts can now basically catch an Uber to space. Although it is going to be risky. I mean, because you'll take an Uber to space, it'll cost you like $12. But then when you come back to Earth, all of a sudden there's gonna be surge pricing. 200,000? I'm not gonna pay 200,000 to go back to Earth.
Well, you could always take the bus.
The bus? Dude, I'm not trying to get probed by aliens, okay? You're getting one star for this.
I actually wonder what one star Uber rides to space would actually look like.
So, the cockpit door blew open, right? The air got sucked out of the cabin and we were like dying. And worst of all, the iPhone charger didn't work. But I, for one, am very excited by how much easier space travel has gotten. I mean, think just 50 years ago, a space launch was a global event. People crowded around their TVs to watch it. Now, there are space launches all the time. You know, no one cares. Soon it's going to be so common that, like, people won't even feel cool anymore. It'll be like telling people you're going to Tulum. People are like, oh, I went to space last week. Oh, congratulations on being basic. Let's move on, though, from outer space to ancient Egypt, where an incredible new discovery was just unearthed.
People in Egypt digging up history dating back more than 2,000 years. Archaeologists are showcasing more than 100 coffins found in a huge burial ground. Each sarcophagus and coffin is painted with intricate carvings. X-rays show mummified bodies inside. A lot of the individuals buried in these are members of high-class Egyptian society, so their coffins were higher quality with more elaborate designs. They're going to go on display at Egypt's Grand National Museum next year.
Wait, they just happened to find 100 coffins? And now I'm sure that they're going to need money to study these coffins? I don't know, guys. Sounds like a typical pyramid scheme. By the way, I love how grave robbing is okay if you just call yourself an archaeologist. Because that's what these guys are doing, right? They're robbing graves. The only difference is they're wearing a weird hat, so then it's okay. Because imagine if you saw some guy digging up your grandma. Hey! Hey, stop that, man! That's my grandmother's grave! I'm wearing the hat. And did you see the look on that one mummy's face? He looks like he got caught doing something embarrassing and he really doesn't want you opening up his sarcophagus right now.
Someone's in here!
That's why you've always got to assume, people. Assume that your grave is going to be dug up one day. Yeah, you got to be prepared. That's why when I die, I'm going to pose like a gangster in my coffin. Like this. So when they dig me up, they'll be like, we don't know much about this ancient culture, but judging by this man's pose, he was clearly a badass. And finally, here's some weird news from the animal kingdom.
We know the platypus is a strange animal, that we know. It's a mammal, but it does lay eggs. It has webbed feet and a duck-like bill. Also, it produces venom. Now, we're also finding out that the coat of these animals glows under a black light. An article published in the journal Mammalia reports if you shine an ultraviolet light on its fur, a platypus will give off a greenish-blue tint. They're one of the few mammals known to do this. It's pretty neat. Scientists are still in the dark, though, about why they have this trait, if there is even a reason at all.
I'm sorry, what? Platypuses glow under black light? Who made these creatures? Huh? They glow, they've got venom, they lay eggs, but they also have fur, and they're mammals? It's almost like God was finished building the earth, and then he used all the leftover pieces to build the platypus.
Just take the spare duck bill and put it together with the raccoon body. Yeah, let's see what happens. This should be interesting.
Honestly, people, we keep finding out more strange things about what platypuses do every single day. Like at this point, let's just put a platypus in the cockpit of a plane. Maybe it knows how to fly. And also, what is happening in the scientific community? Huh? Half the world's scientists are working their asses off to find a vaccine so we can go back to living our lives, and then the other half are like,
I don't know, let's see what glows.
I will say this, it does explain why we've never seen a platypus on an episode of CSI.
All right, everybody, I'm gonna use the black light to scan for any evidence at this murder scene.
Okay, what do we have?
Detective Platypus, what the hell?
No, guys, it's totally not what you think.
All right, we gotta take a short break. But when we come back, President Trump officially concedes, then officially unconcedes the election. What does that mean? Find out when we return.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Daily Social Distancing Show. So late last week, news networks officially called Georgia for Joe Biden, bringing the final electoral college vote to 306 to 232, the exact count that Donald Trump won by in 2016. which basically means that Trump is the Hillary Clinton of this election.
Lock me up! Lock me up!
But many of Trump's biggest fans are refusing to accept that their man has lost. And over the weekend, they hit the streets in D.C. to make their case.
While Trump vows to keep waging his uphill legal battle against the results, thousands of his supporters this weekend flooded the streets of the Capitol.
The demonstrators rallying behind a president who has refused to concede an election he lost. The largely maskless crowd echoing his baseless claims about widespread voter fraud, chanting, "This isn't over."
This isn't over. It's not even close to being over.
Joe Biden! Joe Biden!
Far right groups like the Proud Boys, linked to white supremacy and violence, made themselves visible at Saturday's event.
Wow, guys, this is so strange. Why does the not white supremacist president have all these white supremacists coming out to support him? It's so weird. Also, it's interesting how now all the Trump supporters are suddenly okay with protesting and blocking traffic. How quickly their attitudes have changed. I bet we're only 3 months away from them kneeling at football games like, "I will not stand for the anthem of a country that does not support my MAGA-ness." I actually feel bad for a lot of the people here. I feel bad for the people who've been brainwashed into thinking that Biden didn't win. I feel bad for the people who got hurt in the violence that broke out. And most of all, I feel bad for whoever's U-Haul this is. That has got to be the worst moving day of all time. Because you know that guy was like, "All right, I'll get up really early, pack up quick, it's the weekend so there won't be any traffic." Ah! And it's really no surprise that Trump's supporters aren't admitting defeat, because the truth is, they're just taking their lead from the man himself.
President Trump spent this Sunday golfing and tweeting up a storm. Early this morning, writing this about President-elect Joe Biden. "He won because the election was rigged." Critics and even some Republican supporters took that to mean that Mr. Trump was finally admitting that he had lost. But the president soon followed up with another tweet stating, "He, Biden, only won in the eyes of the fake news media. I concede nothing."
Last night, the president tweeted, "I won the election," even though he is behind by more than 5.5 million votes. Twitter quickly flagged Mr. Trump's claim, noting official sources called this election differently.
I will say, man, for all the talk about Trump being an aspiring dictator, this is some weak shit. Like, now is the time he should be taking over all the state capitals, installing new governors, arresting opposition leaders, doing all of that. Instead, he's just sitting at home trying to manifest a win on Twitter like a little bitch.
"I won. Send. Did that work? Okay. How about I am the winner? Send. No? Okay. How about I lost? Not. That should do it. That's the one."
I mean, the dude is spreading so much misinformation, even Twitter has had it with Trump. Also, if Donald Trump truly believed any of this nonsense, best believe he wouldn't be golfing, right? If you are truly fighting against wrongdoing and corruption, you generally don't find the time to squeeze in a game of golf. Nelson Mandela was never like,
"We must fight to change the system. We must fight against racism and oppression. But first, Daddy needs to work on his short game."
Although at this point, I feel like Trump will always find time for golf no matter what is happening. He could be running away from a bear and he'd still be like,
"The bear's gonna kill me. The bear's gonna kick you. Hold on. Keep your knees bent. Remember, this green is fast. The bear."
So, Donald Trump is saying that he won the election. His supporters are saying that he won the election. But meanwhile, Trump's lawyers are slowly moonwalking away. Am I out of frame?
President Trump facing a new setback in his legal challenges to the election. The Trump campaign is abandoning a major part of his legal challenge to votes in Pennsylvania. The campaign is dropping its claim that officials unlawfully blocked observers from watching ballot counting in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh.
Today, the president's lawyers dropped their lawsuit in Arizona, admitting it would not change enough votes to matter.
In a Pennsylvania lawsuit, a judge asked Trump's attorney, "Are you claiming that there is any fraud in connection with these disputed ballots?" The Trump attorney admitted, "No."
On Friday, a top lawyer at Jones Day, which has represented Mr. Trump's campaigns for more than 4 years, told colleagues during a video conference call that Jones Day would not get involved in additional litigation in this election.
Damn, Donald. You're losing court cases all over the place. It's almost like a miracle. You know, he took one election loss and turned it into 1,000 more losses. Yeah, it's exactly like a miracle, but for losers. I mean, think about it. He's the first president of the United States that lawyers don't want to represent. And lawyers will represent anybody. If you slipped and fell 3 blocks away from a Walmart, you'll find a lawyer who'll be like, we gotta sue that Walmart, you got a case. But Trump is the president, and they're like, come on, man, don't get me involved in your bullshit, man. And the best part is how these lawsuits are slowly whittling down to nothing from where they started. Because when it kicked off, Trump's lawyers were like, Your Honor, this election was rigged. And then it was like, okay, the election wasn't rigged, but they didn't let us observe it. Okay, they let us observe the election, but not as closely as we wanted. Okay, none of that is true, but can we all agree that the word election is weird? Yeah, it's weird, right? Election. Sounds weird, right? We can agree on that. So look, man, Trump can say what he wants. And his supporters can also say what they want, but his lawyers clearly know the truth. And the truth is that Trump lost the election, and not because of any voter fraud, because people voted. And on January 20th, he's gonna have to move out of the White House. The good news for Trump is, there's a guy with a U-Haul who's probably still gonna be out there, and he can help him move. Stick around, because when we come back, Desi Leidick goes one-on-one with Tucker Carlson. And don't forget, Ta-Nehisi Coates is joining us on the show. We'll be right back.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Daily Social Distancing Show. In these corona times, everyone is keeping in touch with their relatives using video calls. And that includes our very own Desi Leidick, who's actually related to Tucker Carlson from Fox News. Yeah, believe it or not, he's her fourth cousin on her aunt's side by divorce. So recently, Desi got in touch with Cousin Tuck, and here's how it went.
Hey, Cousin Tuck, how's it going? Feeling a bit more relaxed now that the election's over? Look, I was hoping that we could just kind of put it all behind us and get back to normal.
None of this is normal.
Yeah, I guess, but at the end of the day, we're still family. Plus, I would love to start planning Thanksgiving now that Halloween's over.
The Great Orange Emergency has passed now, and it's party time.
Woo! That's the spirit! Look, I know it's going to be really hard, but let's just try to not talk about politics at the table this year, okay?
Tens of millions of Americans suspect this election was stolen from them.
Tuck, this sounds like another one of your conspiracy theories.
Ever wonder why people on both sides are embracing conspiracy theories? Why do you think that's happening?
Because you keep saying them on TV. Do you even have evidence that there was cheating?
According to one affidavit, a poll worker saw people bringing handfuls of ballots to a Biden-Harris campaign van.
Really? They rolled up to cheat in a Biden-Harris van? That's like robbing a bank with bags that have dollar signs on them and only happens in cartoons.
We don't know how many votes were stolen on Tuesday night. We don't know anything about the software that many say was rigged. We don't know.
But we don't know for sure that Jared Kushner isn't a papier-mâché sculpture that just came to life either. But we can't assume that without evidence. Look, we're getting off topic here. Okay, this is going to be really controversial. But for Thanksgiving, I want to make a tofurkey this year. Come on, say something. Don't give me that Tucker face.
It's totally wrong and it's crazy.
It's not crazy. Cousin Jessica's a vegan and Aunt Eileen has high blood pressure, so it's what we're having. Hang on, Sean's joining the Zoom. Hey, second cousin Sean. I'm really happy that you're coming to Thanksgiving, but I'm just gonna go ahead and say it. We're not talking politics at the dinner table.
We cannot be intimidated into silence. We need to find out exactly what happened in this election. And there are questions, and that means we have to answer them.
Not at Thanksgiving we don't. And I'm not trying to silence or intimidate anyone. Who's trying to intimidate you here?
The 99% media mob, the Washington swamp, Joe Biden, all desperate. They want to just call it a day and stop you from asking legitimate, tough questions about the election.
Well, it's a good thing none of them are coming to dinner. Look, I know that we don't agree on things politically, but we're all family. So can we just be nice?
They hate us. They've been very clear about that for 4 years. They've never tried to hide it.
That is not true, Sean. I was very happy when you showed up out of the blue, unannounced and completely uninvited last year. It was a nice surprise.
They knew you were coming. They laughed at you when you left.
Tucker, shh. It is one day. Just give me this one day with family without yelling or fighting or talking about conspiracy theories about the election. Can we just have that?
It is a
people who are not even alive still somehow
how some states
to vote
have handled
Tuesday.
This election.
In New York, okay, I'm hanging out now. I'll talk to you at Christmas.
What a start. Ballots.
You did your best, Desi. I hope Thanksgiving isn't too awkward. All right, stick around, because when we come back, I'll be talking to the brilliant Ta-Nehisi Coates. You don't want to miss it.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Daily Social Distancing Show. Earlier today, I spoke with best-selling author Ta-Nehisi Coates. We talked about the current state of the country, his books being adapted into films, and what he thinks America is going to look forward to in the upcoming years. Ta-Nehisi Coates, welcome back to the Daily Social Distancing Show.
Trevor, thanks for having me back, man.
This is truly an honor because I just found out today you are officially the number one guest we've had on the show, as in like you've been on my show the most frequent. Yeah. Imagine that. Six years. What a journey it's been. Well, 5 years, I guess. We've been on, you know, you've been on the show six times in 5 years. That's what it's been.
Wow. That's great. I have no problem with that at all.
I would love to know, as somebody who has been talking to you over these 5 years and somebody who's watched your life change dramatically, but not necessarily your tenor, have you seen a change in the world around you over the past 5 years? Or have you just experienced more of the world being the world? And I mean specifically America, obviously, because that's what you write about most of the time.
Yeah, definitely. To some extent for the worse. You know, I think the worst is pretty obvious. I think 250,000 and counting Americans dead is, you know, pretty obvious. Us picking up 1 million COVID cases a week.
Right.
That is obviously, you know, pretty bad. And the fact that, you know, there's really been no response of note or of merit from the government. I don't know what a state is for if it's not to prevent the senseless death of, you know, 250,000 of its inhabitants. What's the point of having a state? And perhaps that's kind of the point. But that is probably uppermost in my head right now in terms of, you know, turns for the bad. There has been, I think, among a certain portion of Americans outside of the African American community, probably an increased awareness. You know, of certain issues. I think Trump himself has probably made that hard to ignore.
Right.
I think obviously the summer protests made that hard to ignore. I think the disproportionate impact of COVID has made that hard to ignore. How long that will last or what that will come to, I'm not sure, but it certainly is a change, I would say.
We've got a few things happening in the world of Ta-Nehisi Coates. Let's talk first of all about The Water Dancer. The last time I was with you in the studio, you were on to promote the hardcover of the book. Now it's out in paperback. You were exhausted promoting the book, but I guess you got fresh energy because you're back out promoting it again. And I believe that Oprah Winfrey and Brad Pitt have teamed up to turn the book into a film. It's Brad Pitt and Oprah Winfrey. Is there a moment when you stop sometimes and be like, yo, I'm working with Brad Pitt and Oprah Winfrey? It's like, you know what I mean? It's like the kings and queens of white people and black people. You've won the game.
This is the perfect setup. I hate to break your heart, but I've never met Brad Pitt.
Wow.
And, you know, I do know Oprah a little better. You know what I mean? Just a little better. I don't want to take any liberties here. But, you know, these are their production companies, you know, which obviously reflect their vision. You know what I mean?
Yes,
their taste and their aesthetics, you know, again, not casting any shade. But, you know, it's funny because, like, when we've been going through this. Well, shoot, I've been, this is November now. So I have been in discussion with Plan B, which is Brad Pitt's production company.
Yeah.
For about a year now. And Jeremy Kleiner and Didi, you know, over there. So it's been, but I talked to the people who work for them. Like, I talked to the day-to-day people. You know what I mean? And there's this bad, you know, it's constant conversation. I mean, I've been telling as recently as yesterday about what we're going to do, how we're going to do it. But when it's reported out, it's like, hey, Ta-Nehisi's working with Brad Pitt and Oprah to make a...
We need to switch up your game. You need to hire me. I'll be the guy who calls to speak to the people who work for them. And then I'll tell them, yeah, Ta-Nehisi will meet with Brad and Oprah. I mean, you're Ta-Nehisi coach.
Look, the people who do work for them, they're geniuses. They're great. I love them. I really, really do. It's just funny how it gets reported out because I you know, I sit on the phone, you know, with these folks, and I'm saying their names because nobody, you know, really says their names. But, you know, I sit on the phone with a Dee Dee Gardner, and she tells me, you know, what films I should look at and what I should
be
thinking about. You know what I mean? And I'm like, you know, these are the voices that are actually in my head. You know what I mean? Like, when I'm thinking about it as a film, these are the people I'm actually getting feedback from.
Yeah, but when it's reported in the papers, it seems like you're in a room with Oprah and Brad Pitt being like, all right, what do we do with this character, Brad? And he's like, yo, Ta-Nehisi, this is how I think you should do it. And Oprah's like, everybody's getting involved. That's what it seems like.
It's not like that at all.
But it's still a big project, man. I feel like all of your projects are turning into some sort of, you know, you're an author, but your work evokes so much imagery that it almost lends itself to being created into some sort of film. The same thing is happening with Between the World and Me. I got an opportunity to watch an advanced copy of it. And I mean, I love the book. Everyone loved the book. I mean, there's a reason it's a New York Times bestseller forever. But I think seeing seeing people reenact portions of the book in a way that makes the conversation different, it really changed the book. I don't know how to articulate it really, because for those who don't know, you wrote the book in 2015. It was a huge bestseller. And in many ways, it shaped conversations that people have in and around race in America. You know, now what you've done with HBO is they've created this film based on the book, and it has everybody. I mean, from Mahershala Ali to Oprah Winfrey and Black Thought and T.I. and Yara Shahidi. And you've just got all these people. And Joe Morton is easily my favorite in it because of how he articulates what's happening in the book. And it's a conversation. The way you wrote it was a conversation, a letter from yourself to your then 14-year-old son. When you look at what the project is now, first of all, why do you think all of those big names agreed to do it? And what do you think changed in the project? What, like when you put faces to it?
So now I have to play the Brad Pitt Oprah role because I did nothing on that film. I offered like feedback, like two or three. I have no insight into why. It's a beautiful film. Let me be clear. It's beautiful. I'm not exactly sure why, or I'm not exactly sure how, you know, it was made. You know, it is directed, you know, by my good friend Camilla Forbes, who pulled it, you know, together, you know, produced by, you know, her and Susan Kelechi Watson of This Is Us fame. All us went to Howard together. So there's a kind of, you know, intimacy and bond that was already there.
Because it felt true to your work. That's, you know, it's surprising when you say to me, like, no, I wasn't. Because, I mean, you're in the film.
Yes, I am. I am, but I'm not. I would have no idea how to turn Between the World and Me into a film. None.
Yes.
None. Absolutely none. And so Camille is somebody I really, really trusted because she had done the theatrical, you know, adaptation and, you know, I had worked with her before. And so, but when we were pitching, you know, like networks and everything, I remember being in those meetings and, you know, over Zoom, obviously, but being in those meetings and I wasn't nervous at all because I had, you know, really complete faith that, you know, she was going to do something special. What that special thing would be, I had no idea. It's not my problem.
So then you were in an interesting position because you were as surprised as I was when you watched it then. So when you did watch it, did you feel like it kept the essence of what the book was? Or do you think it added something different that the book didn't?
I think it added something different, man. Because I think when you write a book, what you're trying to achieve is a very intimate one-on-one experience with a reader. You know, you want it's just you and the reader locked in this one place.
Yep.
And it's you know, the singular voice that the reader hears that comes out of this collaboration between you two. Theater, to say nothing of television, is totally different in the sense that there was nothing I could have done within Between the World and Me that would have allowed for you to see it the way you see it when Angela Davis reads those words.
Right.
When Yara reads those words, when Courtney B. Vance, you know, it's a very different thing when Mahershala. I can't do that. And frankly, you know, like one of the things, I think we talked about this before, you know, one of the critiques of Between the World and Me was, you know, it didn't open itself up, you know, in terms of gender. You know, it didn't, you know, have, you know, it was this black, heavily black male experience that was standing up for the black experience. You know, and my thing was always, I hear that, but I really don't know what I, as a writer, you know what I mean, could do, you know, very differently within the scope of what that book was.
Right.
And yet, when I saw the film, and I saw it open, and it said, dear son, dear daughter, dear nephew, dear cousin, it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And even the fact that, as I said, having, you know, a black women, having trans, you know, women in that, in, you know, reading, it opens up. It becomes something that is much more than the book could actually, you know, be.
That's amazing, man. I found myself wondering when I was watching it, I was like, this is a book that you wrote for your son. I mean, you know, it's for the people, but you wrote it to your son, your 14-year-old son at the time. I would love to know what conversations you have with your son now, who's 19, and also what you would have said to him then, but he was too young for you to have a conversation about. Like, how has that relationship evolved?
So he turned 20 in August, which is a crucial age. It's a very, very crucial age. Because, you know, he's not, obviously, he's very much not a boy anymore. He's very much a young man, you know, an adult out on his own. I find myself, it's funny, these days, probably listening to Samari more than I find myself telling him anything. He has his own interests, you know, his own, you know, things that he's pursuing. And so probably never more in my life, in our relationship, have I actually listened more than I talked, actually.
Wow.
Wow.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating. Wow. 'Cause I'll never be a, you know, 20-year-old, you know, young black male right now. I won't have that experience. You know, so it's kind of fascinating listening to him, you know, talking and, you know, how he sees the world.
What would you say is the biggest difference that in the way the two of you see the world? I'm sure you have a lot of similarities, but I find, you know, like I'll have it with my younger brother, for instance, or anyone really, if you share a connection with them, but they're of a different generation, sometimes they just see one part of the world in a different way to you because of when they were born and how they were raised. Do you have something like that where you look at your son and you're like, oh, yeah, I guess.
Yes. He is who I was with 10 times the confidence and maybe 10 times the opportunity.
Wow.
Yeah, I recognize a lot of myself in him, but he's just much, much more confident. And I think that comes out of where you know, he was raised, as opposed to, you know, where I was raised, the environment I was in. Me and my wife talk about this all the time, you know, about how, you know, we were constantly shielding ourselves from things, you know, ducking, you know, worried about what was going to happen here. And he has a lot less of that, and thus has a, you know, a much higher degree of belief in his ability to, you know, almost out of his sheer will, you know, just conjure things. You know, and to the extent that there is some, you know, talk back, it's often, you know, pulling him back from that, you know, because I think, you know, it's good. It's good. I really love to see it. But, you know, sometimes you can go a little too far with that.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you a question that I think I've asked you every single time you've been on the show, because you're my favorite person and only person I ask this question to. But looking at the election and looking at like the vaccines and just like where we are now, how optimistic is Ta-Nehisi Coates now about America?
It's a struggle. It's going to be a struggle. It's going to be a struggle for a while, I think. I think I think there was enormous damage done over the last 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think for a party to deny the previous president the opportunity to appoint a Supreme Court judge, a lifetime appointment, to win but not through the popular vote, and then to appoint 3 and 4 years, I think the damage to democratic legitimacy piled onto everything else that, you know, Trump has done, I think is enormous, and I expect to actually outlive me the damage of that. I think it's really, wow, really significant. So I think we're in for some tough times, you know. But, you know, again, I think I've said this before, being African American, being a progeny of people who were enslaved in this country for 250 years and, you know, who lived through, you know, another subsequent 100 years of Jim Crow, having, you know, been born at the time of the rise of mass incarceration, you know, ever thus, when was it not, you know, as it is? Is it worse now than it was then? No, it's not worse. You know, I wouldn't say that, you know. So this is the condition. You know, this is where we are.
As always, man, I appreciate having you on. I'm excited for the movie adaptation of your book that you're not working on with Brad Pitt and Oprah. And I'm excited for the film that was made from your work, but you were just like, yeah, I'm just going to watch it. Just like the rest of you. So either way, I'm excited for you, man. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Good seeing you again. Look after yourself.
Thank you. Thank you.
Don't forget, the paperback of The Water Dancer will be available November 17th. And Between the World and Me will premiere on HBO on November 21st and then be available to stream on HBO Max. Well, that's our show for tonight. But before we go, Thanksgiving is coming up. And because of coronavirus, homebound seniors are at greater risk than ever before, especially those who don't know where their next meal is coming from. Now, luckily, Meals on Wheels is out in the streets, delivering meals to elderly Americans every single day across the country. Until tomorrow, stay safe out there, wear a mask, and remember, the vaccine is around the corner. So start practicing by stabbing yourself in the arm with a pencil, people.
The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition. Watch The Daily Show weeknights at 11, 10 Central on Comedy Central and the Comedy Central app. Watch full episodes and videos at thedailyshow.com. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to The Daily Show on YouTube for exclusive content and more.
AI is making waves in every field it touches. President Biden is now on TikTok, and the election draws closer each day. With so much going on in the world, it is hard to keep up with it all, let me tell you. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal, the co-host of Make Me Smart. It's a podcast from Marketplace. And every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I break down the latest in business and the economy with short daily episodes to make it easy for you to stay in the know. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.